When's the last time you cried really hard? Just think about the last time and what caused it. I have another question. If you were going to cry here really hard, we're not going to make you. And if you want to, you can. But if you were going to cry here really hard, what would it probably be about? Because crying, I think, is an important part of who we are, and it's something we really try to push back a lot. And I think we want to explore this a little bit this morning. I want to dive into the idea of this in prayer as we wrap up our focus on prayer. We're not wrapping up praying. We're going to just do that all year. We're going to pray. But as we wrap up this series on prayer, I want to talk about a prayer that is often not mentioned in series like these. In fact, it's often not mentioned at all in our happy, happy, joy, joy culture. And it's the prayer of lament. And it is a big one and an important one because it requires such deep honesty. It requires deep authenticity. I think we were created for a garden. We were created for Eden. We were created for paradise and perfection and everything to be working in order. And we have a longing for that in our hearts, but we are here. Did anyone wake up this morning and say, it's so good to be waking up in Eden, where nothing ever goes wrong, nothing's ever sad, nothing ever breaks, no one ever loses here? Nope. We live here. We live in the here and now, where hearts and vows and bodies break. And it is hard. From the moment our feet hit terra firma, we are searching for the Eden we left behind. Trauma marks our stories, all of them. We're all marked by some trauma. It's embedded in our souls and our bodies. And when our vision of Eden shatters, we are left with soul debris. And what we do with that debris is going to determine so much of what happens next in our lives. So I believe the first step of the process of metabolizing the trauma experience is the shattering of Eden is lament. It's the full expression of our grief and our pain and our doubt and our frustration. And I've done it before in my car, literally shaking my fist and saying, God, I don't get it. I don't know where you are. I don't know what you're doing. And I didn't make this up. I didn't make up the idea of a prayer of lament being a good idea. It's biblical. Listen to this one from Job and tell me if you've ever prayed this. Why did I not perish at birth? Come forth in the womb and expire. Why did I just die when I was born? How about that, God? I mean, that's a prayer. How about, why is my pain continuous, my wound incurable? Habakkuk 3:16, my legs tremble beneath me. I await the day of distress that will come upon the people who attack us. Mark 10:47, Jesus, son of David, have pity on me. In this one, it's blind Bartimaeus, and he, in the Greek, it says he croaks this out. He screams so loud, he loses his voice. He sacrifices his dignity and his now I lay me down to sleep, and he prays a prayer of desperation and honesty. He prays an honest prayer to Jesus. Have pity on me. And then Mark 14 is actually Jesus. Father, all things are possible to you. Take this cup away from me. As he sweats blood, he begs God to see him and understand what he's going through. The people of Israel were great at lament. The first part, they're so great at it, they wrote the book on it. It's called Lamentations. And Jeremiah wrote it. And the first part of it is actually an acrostic, which is a literary device like poetry, where each stanza starts with the next letter of the alphabet. A, B, C, it goes A through Z. And that was why they did it, because it meant I'm pouring out my heart from A to Z. I'm not leaving anything out. I'm not going easy on anyone. I'm not going easy on God. I'm not going easy on these people. I am pouring it all out. Leaving it all there. In fact, this verse from Lamentations is a really depressing and wonderfully beautiful book. But this verse, arise, cry out in the night from the first watch of the night. Pour out your heart like water in the presence of the Lord. Again, that's not a static little prayer. That's not how we teach our kids to pray every day or pray over dinner. Pour out your heart like water. That's everything running out, blood and tears and fears and frustrations, all the stuff coming before him. The children of Israel tore their clothes when they would lose someone. They put ashes on their face. They offered prayers. They lit candles. They stopped grooming. They stopped doing anything fun. In these ways, their internal grief was allowed to come out into the full light of day, and no one had to wonder, what's up with that guy? I wonder how he's taking the death of his mom. He's just out there, not taking a shower, putting ashes on his face, wailing in the middle of the street. It was how they did it. There was no mistaking what they were going through, that they're mourning. And there was certainly no insinuation that a person should be able to move through loss or grief like it's just a regular Wednesday. They acknowledge we have to grieve fully. They were so good at lament that they valued it so much that they paid for it. They hired mourners to come in and mourn with them. That's how deeply they believed that we were not meant to lament alone. I love this idea, this I may not feel the depth of sorrow you feel about losing your spouse, but I will come to your house and cry and wail and writhe in pain and feel the pain of it with you, and I will be there by you. I will stand with you and I will cry too. I will share this space with you and inhabit the grief as if it was my own so that your grief can have full expression. I will stand by you and cry so that when people say, why is that person crying? They'll look at both of us and not just you. I will help normalize you feeling that pain. And if anyone thinks it's weird, they can blame me too. It's a big thing to stand with each other in grief and loss. And when they did this, it honored the pain of those left behind. It honored the pain of the one who had died, the loss of the one who had died, but it also honored the pain of the one who was left behind. The grief multiplied, and then when it was done, and they went on with their business, having fully expressed it. We cannot talk about real, true, honest, effective prayer without talking about prayers of lament. And it's hard in America because we're not that type of way. We're not that kind of country. We just aren't very honest about our grief. We're honest about our complaints, but we're often not honest about what really is living inside of us in terms of grief. You know what we're great at? We're great at autonomy. We're great at responsibility and independence, but we are much better at fixing stuff than we are at feeling stuff. This is to our detriment, and it's not the biblical way. It's not the way to metabolize grief, and I think we're facing an emotional and mental health crisis because of it. I read a story this morning about in 1944, they were trying to figure out what was going on with the soldiers in combat because about 30 days in, they would lose all will to fight. They lost all their ability. And in the Normandy campaign, they found that the soldiers at 45 days in were literally in a vegetative state. They couldn't function. They were so psychologically traumatized that they had lost their ability to function. And so they tried to figure out what to do about it. And what they did, and this applied to nearly 100% of the soldiers. Those who weren't physically injured were psychologically destroyed by day 45. So they named this condition combat fatigue. And here's a quote that I read. With a war to be won and in the face of a manpower crisis, the military's primary concern was to return men to duty as quickly as possible. This was done by evacuating psychologically traumatized men to aid stations just to the rear of the front lines. There, casualties received a dose of sodium amytal, which put them into a deep sleep for a period of up to 48 hours. Afterwards, they ate a hot meal, showered, and put on a clean uniform. Then they were evaluated by medical personnel. Most responded positively to the treatment, and 50 to 70% of them returned to combat in 3 days. They put them to sleep. They gave them a shower. They put a clean uniform on it. They rubbed some dirt on it. Just get up and rub some dirt on it and get back into combat. You got to get going again. And that's a lot of what we do. This is how we are built as a nation of survivors. And we're the land of the free and the home of the brave. And we can do this. And so we pack it away and we don't want to feel it. They never got a chance to process their pain. They didn't heal psychologically. They just got him some sleep and a meal. I heard a story from a friend of mine about how the veterans that came home on a boat from war versus the veterans that came home on a plane from war were exponentially more healthy psychologically. And it turns out they had about 6 weeks on that boat trip, and they were with each other, and they all told their stories. They all lamented together. They talked about how bad it was. They knew they understood each other. They shared their stories. Those boats became a space for the sharing. And the ones who flew home on the plane didn't have that chance. And they landed in a world that had no room for their story. Now, if you were in a situation where you had been in battle, where you had seen things that hurt, where you had suffered such deep loss, and you finally get to go home to your wife and your kids and your city, would you have chosen a boat or a plane? I'm gonna get on that plane and get home. But what I'm taking home is gonna last my whole life if I don't get help. And so we don't choose lament. We don't wanna sit for 6 weeks and tell our stories. And yet, science tells us it's better. The Israelites tell us it's better if we're honest about pain. It matters. There is a reason the biblical model for lament involves community. There's a reason I need your help to process my grief and guilt and pain and trauma. But that doesn't make it easy. And I wonder sometimes why we're so reluctant to bring the trauma in our stories to Jesus and to one another. I'm the worst offender in this, at least I was. And I'm gonna just tell you, there are times I stand up here and I speak about things that I'm just learning about too. But in terms of lament, I'm a pro. I've done this one. And I can tell you that it has been very hard for me to learn how to bring my pain out because it feels icky. There are a lot of reasons I don't want to. In fact, my husband had ALS and I was his caregiver for 4 years. And afterwards, I got my life back up and running. I told you a little about that a couple of weeks ago. Got my life back up and running, doing fine, doing great. About 2 years later, feeling like things are good. And I got vertigo one day, which happens to me sporadically. And for some reason, it tipped off anxiety like I've never known. I thought I was dying. It was bad. And I went to my medical doctor, and I'm like, I don't know what to do. I think I'm crazy. I think I've lost it. I feel like I'm dying. Am I dying? And she said, no, you've just not processed this grief. You haven't. You haven't been to your counselor in 3 years. You haven't done, you're doing great at keeping going. You put the uniform on. You patch yourself up. You're not crying in public. But you haven't processed this. You need to go back to counseling. And I was like, nope. I don't want to. I don't want to revisit any of that time. And she looked at me and she said, sorry. I know, I fired her right quick. That's a terrible answer to give a grieving woman. I went back to counseling. I had to learn how to process and grieve. And in fact, I remember one counseling session with my counselor where she was like, we gotta tap into this. And I thought I was gonna cry to death. It was bad. But it was right to let it work out, up and through and out of my system. It matters. I think some of the reasons we don't want to do it, one is because we don't know what we'll do with the pain that surfaces. What am I going to do with this when I cry about this? The next one is we don't know how to relate to the people involved in our stories if we're honest about the hurt they caused. That's hard. Or the hurt we caused them. It's hard to fully grieve something if you're worried about the person that did harm to you or if you're worried about your own actions in that. I think we see grieving as weak. And I think this is probably the biggest one. As believers, I think we often see joy and sorrow as mutually exclusive emotions. But Isaiah says it is the oil of joy. It's not the acid of joy. It's not like it dissolves all grief on contact. Both of these things can be true in our heart at once. We can hold joy and sorrow at the same time. In fact, I think laughter through tears is about the best emotion there is. There's something about that that is beautiful and healing. Those two emotions, when they work together, can lead us closer to the heart of God. I'm sure of it. Joy and sorrow work together. These reasons keep us hiding behind fake smiles and building bigger and dumber platitudes in the church. Just, God will never give you more than you can handle. Get on your way. Back into battle, tiger. Or my friend who lost her son at 21, at least you have three other sons. Things like that. Things that we do because we're not comfortable with lament, so nobody else can be either. We can't be around it either, and that is not the community that I want to be part of. We have to be willing to grieve together. Even if I secretly think in my heart, you ought to be over this. Even if I secretly think in my heart, what you experienced is nothing compared to what I've experienced. Even then, I have to make space for your grief and your trauma and your story because it matters. It all matters. We weaponize gratitude and we try to make it the antidote to sorrow rather than a counterpart. But sorrow is not sin and gratitude does not dissolve grief. And because we know in our hearts that these one-liners are not working to help catapult our friend in pain out of their sorrow, we feel inadequate and we worry about the potency of God. Oh no, if you're really sad and I'm telling you God is comforting you and you're not showing visible effects of God comforting you, is he really true and can he really do it? Yes, he's really true and yes, he can really do it, and it's not yours to worry about that part. It's just yours to stand with those who grieve. It's just ours to be together in this. It's ours to lament together as we go. Instead of putting our emotions in the prison of shame, this idea of I shouldn't feel that, I should be able to control that, I should faith my way out of fear or anger or sorrow. Instead of turning away from our emotions, what if we turned toward them and let them lead us toward the wound that's causing the pain and toward the God who can bring healing? Not to fix our emotions, your emotions aren't broken, but to tend our wounds. And I think emotions have gotten a bad rap in the Christian church for a long time. Oh, that's just, I remember I was a youth pastor for a long time and people would go to winter camp, by the way, and they would come back all excited and they're like, Jesus is the best thing that ever happened to me, and we danced till 2 a.m. and it was great. And their parents would inevitably say, it's just emotion. And I just think, if your faith doesn't even touch your emotions, what good is it anyway? Of all the things that the gospel of Jesus Christ ought to be is emotional. I mean, this is who we are. It's our whole life. If I'm literally saved for eternity, that should make me feel something. It's emotions are not the enemy. They are our friend. They shouldn't be in the driver's seat, but they matter and they're valid. And so emotions lead us toward the wound and what truly needs to be healed. There are six big gifts of lament that I am really thankful for in my own life. And these are gifts that are like, I had a friend who called these perverse victories because it's the kind of gift you don't want. You kind of want the gift, but you don't want it at the expense of having to be sad, but they're worth it. They're good. The first one is clarity. Being honest with our sorrow helps give us language around our grief. And that language brings clarity and truth. There's a sentence that I find really, really helpful and really clarifying. And it is, I feel fill in the blank and I need fill in the blank. Super simple. I feel and I need. I feel betrayed and I need to know God hasn't forgotten me. I feel alone and I need to know I'm loved. I feel like a failure and I need to know I'm forgiven. I feel overwhelmed and I need help processing. I feel overwhelmed and I need space to process. This is the language of lament, but it is also the language of community. We feel and we need, and we need each other inside of that. The second gift of lament is comfort. 2 Corinthians 1 says, praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of compassion and the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our troubles so that we can comfort those in any trouble with the comfort we ourselves receive from God. For just as we share abundantly in the sufferings of Christ, so also our comfort abounds through Christ. Do you see it being held together? Our comfort and our suffering? Our suffering and our comfort, it's together. Just as he suffered for us, he also bought comfort for us. On one of my very sad days during my husband's illness, I was overwhelmed in every way. I was overwhelmed with my job and overwhelmed with a book deadline and overwhelmed being a caregiver and sad and just out of strength, absolutely out of strength. And I tried to push it away. You know, like when you have to throw up and you're like, I'm not going to in front of you. Like, I'm gonna have to. That's how this was. And finally, I've just like let myself feel it. And I dissolved onto my couch and just sobbed out my heart to Jesus. And I always think those waves of grief are going to last forever. And they really always last about 20 minutes. That's about how long your body can sustain that level of grief. And then you're like, well, okay, I guess I'm going to get up and going now. And so I cried it out. And I remember in the middle of it just telling God, I can't even make dinner. I can't. And you know, I've got these kids and they expect to eat like every day. Every day they want food on the table. Unreasonable little people. And I'm just like crying and I'm like, why can't I can't go to the fridge. I can't go to the store. I can't move myself to do this. And finally, as the grief wore down and I wore out of energy and I sat up and I felt God speaking comfort to me. I just felt it. I can't explain it. It was just intangible. I just felt him there. And I was through the storm, shaken, but still standing. And my doorbell rang. At exactly that moment, my doorbell rang. And I went to the door, and standing on my front porch was a neighbor that I'd never met before. And she was holding a big soup pot. She is a German, old, really crabby lady with gray hair and piercing blue eyes and a very thick accent. Honestly, she might not have been crabby. It might have just been the accent. I don't know. Now I know. I love her. But she was standing there with a soup pot. And I was a mess. I was a big old mess, swollen face and eyes and whatever. And she said, rough day? And I said, so rough. And she thrust the soup pot into my hands and she said, God told me. And she walked away. That was it. While I'm crying on my couch, she's bringing me her soup. And it was delicious. She's a good German cook. It was really, she brought us a lot of meals after that. It was good. And you know, that was incredible. It was this amazing moment, but I don't want to pretend this is cause and effect because it isn't. I have had plenty of times of lamenting where no German woman has showed up with a soup pot. I'm still asking God about that. I would like that to happen every time I'm sad. I've had plenty of that, but really, truly, he almost always tells me in some kind of way that he's there. And even on the times where I don't hear him tell me that he's there, I just know he is because I have a Bible. Just know he's there. I know it. The third gift of lament is communion. Matthew 5:4 says, blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. That word comforted in the Greek is the word parakaleo, and it means to come, to draw, to invite, to come near. This is where God pulls you up in his lap, and he says, come be with me, I want to comfort you. Psalm 34 says, God is near to the brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit. I love the word near. God is near to your broken heart. I believe God is near to your broken heart, even if you haven't asked him to be. Communion is different than just experiencing God's presence. Communion is participating in God's presence. I mean, we have communion, actual communion stuff sitting over there, but just because it's here doesn't mean you took communion today. You've only taken communion if you go get one and take communion. I recommend it. You should. Not right now. But so communion with God, his presence is engaging in it. I'm here with you. You're here with me. And now I recognize that I'm here with you. I bring my broken heart to your healing. Having suffered loss has changed communion for me. It used to be that when I would sit down to take communion, I would be like, I'm so glad and so thankful that Jesus suffered for me. And now when I take communion, I feel like I'm so glad you get me. I'm so glad you suffered and you understand what I feel right now. Communion is the most beautiful amalgamation of joy and suffering. We recognize the suffering of the cross and we recognize the resurrection of the cross. And every time we take it, it reminds us of who we're gonna be as well. Communion is a gift of lament and then courage. Choosing fully to engage my sorrow gives me courage to know that I can face whatever is next. If I hide my, anything that we hide away has some kind of power over us. And if we hide away the whatever it is that I'm afraid to grieve, I'm afraid to pray about, I'm afraid to talk with a friend about, it will stay there. And it keeps me afraid of whatever I want to do next. I know that I can face anything with honesty. And it's not my responsibility to just move on or just get over it. And when I face my own pain, I am empowered to take more risks. Courage is one of the big gifts of lament. And then compassion for others, but also for yourself. I mean, man, we're hard on ourselves. We're really hard on ourselves. Lament shepherds our hearts towards tenderness, away from judgment, towards tenderness. Lament draws us somewhere. That line that says, be kind because everyone you see is facing a big battle that you can't see. It matters. It matters how we feel compassion for others. And my dance with grief has helped me understand the pain of others. Not exactly. Certainly, I've only experienced one kind of loss specifically, but at least it makes me experience and understand pain. And at least it helps me understand, I think I used to think pain was for those who didn't do things right. I think that's what I thought. When I was teaching a Bible study on suffering, we did a teaching and then they broke into small groups and I had a young girl come to me and she had landed in a group with older women and she came and she goes, I don't like my group. And I said, what's going on? And she goes, they're just all so negative. They're sad and they've been through so much and that's just not my life. I mean, I've really tried. And she was very cute and beautiful and engaged, newly engaged to a man who looked like Captain America. She was fine. And she's like, I'm just not feeling it. I can't relate to these women. And I just feel like, you know, they probably need to move on from their grief. And I said, so what is the grief that you've experienced? And she said, honestly, none. I've tried to like live my life right so that my life has turned out good at 25. My life has turned out good. And I was like, okay. But what about like when you were young? Did you ever have like an argument with a classmate? Did you have something not go right? Did you ever lose at basketball? Anything? And she was like, literally, Bo, I've never had a problem. And I wanted to say, but didn't say, maybe you should ask for one. Maybe you need a problem. Because as it stands now, you are surrounded by a wealth of experienced women who could pile up beauty in your life, but you cannot receive from them because you haven't experienced anything hard and you've got nothing to take to a heart-aching world. Nothing. Don't ask for problems. You don't need to. You're people acquainted with problems, I'm sure of it. The more we allow ourselves to experience and understand our own sorrow, the more we'll begin to understand and automatically see the suffering in other stories. This one really is both a gift and a burden. The more compassionate you are, the more it hurts. But it's really pretty wonderful. It's really beautiful to be able to see the world as it really is. Sixth gift is credibility. I trust those who have walked the long, hard road of sorrow. If you've had a story of loss or deep pain, you know it when you run into somebody who also has it. You just know it. There's a something there. You recognize it when someone has had a lot of experience in the shadowlands or in the trenches. And I trust those who have been honest with themselves and aren't afraid to be honest with others. I look to those who have come out on the other side stronger and softer and more in love with Jesus. A quote I love, feeling seen is realizing that the person you're talking to has been to the same life forest because of the way they can articulate the sight of the sunlight through the trees and because they carry the scent of pine. It's never too late to lament. And it's nothing is too small to lament. The worst thing we can do in the church where we're supposed to be community is compare our pain to each other. It just doesn't work. We don't want to do that. We just want to say, I honor this grief. I honor this pain. I will join with you. I will feel it with you. It's one thing to say, I'm sorry. It's another thing to say, I'm with you. I make space in my happiness for your sorrow. I make space in my success for your failure. I make space here to be able to show up and bring the love of Jesus. Because here's the thing. I found that there are times where I feel this wave of grief that takes me over and kind of shuts me down. And I'm there, and what I tell myself is this won't last forever. This won't last forever. I know grief won't last forever. But then there are times where I'm riding high and everything's good, and our kids are 10 out of 10 doing well, literally 10 out of 10 doing well. And I tell myself now, this won't last forever. It won't. Because this is life. This is not Eden. This is our world, and it is beautiful and terrible, but we are going to make beauty come from it. As we begin to be honest with Jesus about our pain, about our heartache, about our sorrow. I had a list of questions for you to ponder during this song, but I don't want to give you a list. I want to give you one point of action, one sentence to form out of the ashes in your heart or the pain in your soul. And the sentence is, as we mentioned before, I feel, fill in the blank, and I need, fill in the blank. I feel sad and I need to know why. I feel angry and I need peace. I feel deserted and I need a friend. I feel desperate and I need hope. I feel poor and I need provision. I feel happy and I need nothing but Jesus. That's great too. Just be honest. Be honest about what you feel and what you need during the course of this song. And then Casey's going to close this up.
You sing with us. Great is your faithfulness to me. Great. Great is your faithfulness. from the rising, from the rising sun to the setting, I will praise your name. Great is your faithfulness to me. So to the one who sees us, to the God who knows us, to the one who sees our pain, our grief, our sorrow, the one who sees our happiness and our joy, God, in our thinking, our speaking, our acting, our doing, the way we change, the way we process things. Lord, you're above it all, you're in it all, and you see us. So today we give you our grief, our lament, give you our joy. Thanks for holding us in all of this space together. We praise your name. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen. Amen. Thanks for worshiping and singing with us today, coming to church. We love you. There's pancakes in the commons. Meet somebody new, get to know somebody. And if you need prayer, if you're still processing a moment, something's happening in your life, our prayer team is available. Also, I lied. There's no pancakes, so you have to go buy them on your own. So pancakes were for the in between services. My bad. Go in peace. We'll see you next time.